Welcome to a psychodelicious conversation on mental health issues and trends from two local mental health professionals in the greater Lansing area. I'm Michael Stratton, LMSW.
And I'm Morgan Bowen, DNP, PMHNP, and we're here to provide you with a deep dive into the human experience of consciousness and beyond. Our aim is to be educational and entertaining, so just kick back and open your ears and your minds.
I'm Mike Stratton.
And I'm Morgan Bowen.
And we are here to talk about shame. This is part two.
I'm Dedalian.
And Dedalian is our producer.
Producer.
We're a little goofy.
Right now we're rolling season two. Yeah.
Season two.
Yeah.
If you haven't listened to season one, or well,
listen to
you have a lot of catching up to do.
You do.
And if you haven't listened to part one of Shame, this might not make sense. So go back and listen to part one of Shame. This is part two. This
I think
is
shame what, makes sense to everybody.
Yeah, to understand some of the manifestations of it, some of how it comes about, all that kind of stuff is stuff that we explored in the first chunk. Mm-hmm. But we could have done a
and how to deal with it and process it. Or
well, that's this part.
That's what we're doing now. That's what, we kind of hinted a little about.
Yeah, but now we have to get into it. What do you? How do you deal with it? How do you deal with it?
Oh, you got to bring it to light in my mind, you know. So I remember, you know, so coming out, I was 16, you know, was I 15? 15 or 16. And, you know, I thought being gay was going to be something that I was going to hide forever. I had to hide it forever and ever and ever. And I just kind of just thought that that was the way I had to be. And when I came out, it just was this enormous. It was terrifying. It was not a great experience, I guess, but I just remember the relief. Yeah. The relief made it so worth it immediately. It was like, whatever happens from here, at least I am not, I mean, I just felt like free in a way.
Did people respond differently than you thought they would?
Interesting. Well, it was kind of a stage thing. It wasn't like I came out, you know, to everybody. So my parents were actually the first people to know. And of course they always knew, but so they were, you know, I've talked about this before. I mean, they were fairly support, I would say moderately supportive. This was the 90s. They were very baby boomer about it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, we love you. We will always love you, but this is a hard life. This is, you know, this is not a people in this population are marginalized and you will be at the recesses or the edges of society. And I said, that's cool.
I mean, would you agree though that they made it sound a little more disparaging than
yes,
it really is?
Yeah. I think that they did. They just didn't really have any gay friends.
And for their time period, yeah. That's probably what they witnessed yes. too. Yeah.
Exactly.
So they were being honest with what they felt.
True. And my father's a psychiatrist and he was, you know, schooled in the early 70s. Homosexuality and other sexuality or gender-based things were they were mental illnesses. And so the world in which they came from and the world in which they worked in was not, certainly not what it is today. But the moral of this parable is that I felt, you know, so much better, even though it was right. uncomfortable, even though it brought about a whole other thing, you know, it just was, the relief was so, I just always remember that. I even remember the chair. I sat down in this chair.
Wow.
And it was just like, the world was different.
You have a specific visceral memory of it. Yeah. That's profound.
Yeah. And then other experiences of, you know, I've got to fix this without telling anybody. I've got to make sure that this is my thing. And you lose control of it. And it's so scary and terrible. But then it turns out to be that's what needed to happen to move forward.
Your story kind of reminded me of this. One of my best friends who we reconnected after college. We were really good friends in high school. Kind of parted ways when college started, but then came back together. And I was just kind of re-brought back an image of him, and you could tell as he went to tell me that he was gay, how he was not really embarrassed about it, but you could tell he didn't know how I was mm-hmm. going to react, mm-hmm. and that there was this, I don't want to say shame in who he was, but just the fact that he had never told me before mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. had the ability to come kind of talk to me about it. Mm-hmm. I can't say that I really knew, but I think the timing was good. Because growing up in the 80s, you know that the 80s were not very...
No.
I mean, it was that point where I almost feel like, well, 70s probably even too, where it was becoming more acceptable, but it was still a lot of pushback. And then as time has gone, I feel like it's... I mean, this is completely heterosexual perspective, male, saying things seem better to me, I know that it's still not altogether, so.
Oh, my gosh. The gay festival in Old Town a few weeks ago was huge.
Yeah, yeah.
It was bigger than any of the other festivals, and it was
anytime you're in that situation, you're always going to get pushback, so.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, Morgan, similar. You know, my experience was similar. I had that series of nightmares that I talked about, you know, in the first part of the show, of being told, you can't be here, you can't be here. And that evaporated after I came out with my addictions. Mm. And once I started dealing with those and addressing those and doing what I needed to do and naming that and claiming it. But there is something about putting the light on it and talking to people about it and doing what you need to do to deal with it, to live the kind of lifestyle you need to live with that.
Yeah, I think that was the additional point, that you could see the relief in his eyes when he realized, oh, you are okay with this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, that's okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. He thought, basically, I would never want to talk to him or be his friend again.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah. No. Well, that's exactly, that's a part of that shaming perspective of I will be shunned. I am unacceptable. I'm going to be rejected. This is not going to be okay with people. And with some people, it's not okay. Mm-hmm. With some people, it's, you know, they struggle with that. But the idea of being able to cope with it by naming it and talking about it and finding people that are supportive of you is so important. And sometimes that happens in a therapeutic, hopefully it happens in a therapeutic context, but it also happens in friendships, with family. And oftentimes people will experience like, okay, this isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. On the other hand, sometimes they find, oh, this is why I haven't talked about it, because you're going to act like this. Yeah, so.
Hmm. Yeah, and there are, going back to the coming out, I mean, there are not great coming out stories, but the, you know, moving forward with taking that off the table as far as like something that holds a person back. I mean, you know, I've also known people who lived closeted for most of their life and then came out later in life. And that's a whole other experience that finally they're able to live the life that they want to live, but also live without the shame of, or at least have taken away that burden of the shame.
Yeah, so an interesting point just comes up to me. The idea, like, you knew you were gay for a long time. I knew I had some kind of a substance use problem for a long time. When people don't know, if they experience shame but they don't know what it is, what do you think about that? Mm. I mean, it usually will be manifesting in some way, some behavioral way probably, that they're...
Well, I'm thinking about people, people with trauma, you know, trauma, and they may or may not remember. I mean, there is somewhat of there's not a controversial idea about the psyche suppressing really bad things that happen. The controversial thing I was thinking of was reclaimed memories and this that happened in kind of the 80s and the 90s.
That drives me crazy. I've had so many clients come to me and say, I know I was sexually abused, but I don't remember any of it. And it went on for a long time, and I don't remember any of it. Or I suddenly remember that I was sexually abused, and I'm like, yeah, I doubt that. I mean, that's going to be controversial for some people, but that was a whole thing that there were a wave of therapists that were saying, if you don't remember it, that means it happened to you. And I just thought that was so destructive.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, what I was thinking was, you know, people who either have been through trauma, maybe, you know, remember it, it's very viscerally part of their life, but then act out in, you know, ways that are not necessarily maybe they are reacting or reenacting the trauma, but acting out sexually or with drugs or risky behaviors, whatever that may be. And that's not uncommon, you know, especially in adolescence and young adulthood and oftentimes fueled by substance use or what have you. But that's living, you know, and is it a choice? Is it not a choice? But living in a different lifestyle that, and sometimes it's, this is the way I want to live. This is who I am. This is mm-hmm. what I'm doing. This, you know, there's nothing wrong with me. Although from the outside looking in, is that a manifestation of shame? Is that a reappropriation, like taking control of experiences that happened? And then,
well, the more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm thinking that if you start with someone's feelings of, and their, you know, what's their emotional sense of themselves, there's that great book, The Body Keeps the Score, mm-hmm. that the body will store traumatic memory. And as you are able to talk about, Bessel van der Kolk is the author mm-hmm. of that. And when someone gets in touch with something, you know, often I will ask, where do you experience this in your body? And they'll be able to point right to it. And if you direct them to kind of take some deep breaths and talk about it, and what does it feel like, and are thoughts coming up? And when you do EMDR with a person, they can link that to specific kinds of memories. Now I'm getting this float back memory of this happening in my life or that happening in my life. It's usually something they do have a memory of that's connected mm-hmm. to that particular sensation, though.
I'm also thinking we should have a woman on this panel. Well, we are absent of a lady.
I wonder if
a woman's experience of shame. I mean, it's going to be totally different.
I would think so. And I think there are many women out there who are have been saying this for about a year.
All through season one.
That they should be.
Where's the woman? Where's the woman's perspective? And I agree. We need another microphone, though.
We can make it happen. Yeah. I can always step away, or we can add one in. So we're good.
We're taking...
Calling all women. Well,
yeah, calling all women. We're accepting applications. You have to have a mild background.
In psychotherapy.
And the human experience.
Or the human experience. You had to have lived a life and be willing to be engaged in a lot of self-disclosure.
You know, with my clients, there's a lot of, again, I work with a lot of trans folks. So the gender progression, gender dysphoria, and then progressing through transition, you know, whatever that may mean for the person, mm-hmm. is a lot about moving through shame, kind of trying to navigate personal journey, what's best for them, who they are, versus the blowback that they, I mean, there's always, hopefully it's in a supportive mm-hmm. situation, but, you know, there's cultural blowback, there's oftentimes family or really, you know, if they're in a relationship, marriage, sometimes children. It's both painful for them, and to be clear, that's usually therapeutically led, like with a therapist who specializes typically in gender progression. There's a lot of pain that goes with that. It's up and down, a lot based on circumstances, but there's a lot of power, or it's not necessarily joy because it can be not fun, but generally a positive, like a reclamation of self, a alleviation of shame, a, you know, feeling that they are becoming who they are, who they were meant to be.
As you say that, I think about a person building a context for themselves, you know, finding their tribe, basically, of mm-hmm. finding other people. Whatever you have, other people have experienced it. If you name it, there's other people that are experiencing it. And if there are groups of people that would be able to connect and say, yep, that's the way I felt too. I had that happen to me. This is how I dealt with it. This is what works for me. This is what didn't work for me. And I mentioned, you know, for instance, Weight Watchers or people in recovery programs talk about how healing that is to sit in a group of people who have a similar dilemma and have had similar struggles. It helps them to both integrate that sense. And I think that is the eventual goal, is to integrate into yourself. This is a part of who I am. It's not the whole me, mm-hmm. but it's a part of me. And it's part of me, how I felt about myself. It's part of my experiences. It's part of my trauma. And this is what I'm doing now to work with it and deal with it.
And it's so hard to do alone. You know, now I'm thinking of people with substance use disorder. A lot of times, you know, I'm seeing them and they're wanting to find out information. And I think I might have a drinking problem or what have you. And one of the recommendations is typically finding a community of folks who have been where they're at and mm-hmm. are on the other side, whatever that looks like. But like, I would say probably 99.9% of the time, the person is like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to talk to anybody mm-hmm. about this. I just want to fix it. I'm like, well, we're not going to be able to fix that right here, like here and now. Like, this is kind of like a whole thing that is going to be much larger than maybe what you're thinking. Yeah. But I can understand the fear that, I mean, it is shame. It's really shame. Yeah. I don't want anyone to know. I don't want to talk to other people about their, you know, but almost, I would say 99.9% of the time as they move through that, if they do move through that, because that keeps people away from recovery mm-hmm. for of whatever, the shame keeps people away. I mean, it keeps people in the situation that they're in the shame and in the pain.
And it's, this is controversial, but it's the way I feel about it, that the recovery movement, part of what their whole thing is, we have to remain anonymous, because mm-hmm. if we're not anonymous, that means we're not being humble. And our humility is the most important thing. But absent of a lot of role models of people who are like, oh, all these people have these addictive issues and they got helped through going through a 12-step recovery program, I wonder how much that blocks people from entering, mm-hmm. you know, that they don't have those really healthy role models. So in my wording, I say that I think sometimes the 12-step movement has unconsciously collaborated with the concept of shame by keeping themselves quiet, by keeping themselves silent, by keeping themselves hidden. I mean, it's simple enough to call and find out where a meeting is and you're accepted and all that kind of stuff, but just the idea that, no, we have to be unidentified. We have to remain anonymous.
But does that allow somebody who does feel shame about that to be able to walk in there and know that they're okay?
Certainly. Certainly. You can go in and not identify yourself as anything other than your first name. Mm-hmm. And I've known a number of people who've used different first names, even, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. or they've gone to online meetings where they don't, you know, that they don't know anyone in the meeting. That's something.
Or
that
turn like the camera. I mean, you can be literally anonymous.
Right.
Some meetings that you have to have your camera on. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It just depends on the situation. But
yeah, for sure. But anyway, but that basically, you know, what we're describing is the ability to name it, to get your feelings out about it, to be able to express it to somebody, to really integrate it into your sense of yourself.
And to connect. I mean, so I'm thinking of Brené Brown. I mean, you know, this is the realm of Brené Brown, which
it is.
I mean, she's amazing. I mean, I don't know if you've read her books, but she's incredibly inspiring, and she's well traveled and kind of she's got a PhD. I mean, she's definitely a psych, you know, she's educated, she's practiced, she's now more in the, you know, kind of public speaking. Mm-hmm. But she did research too, because a lot of her books were, you know, reference her research. But her work on shame and her discussion of shame is, I mean, it's amazing. I mean,
and it's like we talked about in the first part of this, part of shame is a secret. That secrecy, this is a little off color, but I think I can say it here. When people sometimes wonder about the difference between what's a secret and what's private, I say, you know, everybody deserves privacy. Privacy is something you should have. You're entitled to privacy. You should be able to go into a bathroom and do whatever you need to do there, and no one, that's private. Mm-hmm. No one knows. If you go into the bathroom and you take a shit on the floor, that's a secret. That's a secret. That's something you feel shame about. Or a dump on the floor, will that get past the censors, Italian?
What are you talking about?
I'll take care of what needs to be taken
Quit
care of.
Quit taking a dump on the floor, Mike.
Mike's coming back, season two.
He's coming in hot. He's coming in hot.
He's like, it's season two. I'm taking over. Not holding back at all.
Anyway.
Point being is the secret is something that, well, isn't really a secret, but you do not want people knowing about it.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, your secret is not safe with me.
Whereas the privacy is something that we all should be respecting and that should be allowed for any and everybody.
If it harms yourself or others, then it crosses the line from privacy into secrecy into something that is shaming or shameful.
I have a niece who's 6 and my nephew is 10, and you know, as they were potty trained, there was a change. There was, you know, you change their diapers, you're all in there and everything's fine. They're running around naked. And then one day they're like, this is private. And you're like, oh, is it? Something has changed, which you respect. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it is mm-hmm. a part of the process. I remember being, I'm a nurse, you know, so I'm like, well, are we like doing what we need to do? And are we washing our hands? And are we cleaning correctly? And so, yes, it's private, but I'd like to know what exactly is happening in there.
Right.
But, you know, you got to let it go and let them do their thing.
Have we exhausted this?
have we run the course?
At some point, we, you know, as kids.
All right, recap. Ways to address it one more time.
Talking about it. You know, the shame tells you don't tell anybody. Nobody should know. Nobody wants to know. And the answer is usually to do the opposite of what that is.
And find your people. A Psychodelicious Conversation is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is no substitute for therapy and should not be treated as such. If you feel a need for real therapy, you should consult your local provider, Google therapy or therapists in your area, check with community mental health, or a suicide hotline if you are feeling suicidal.
Mike and Morgan welcome your questions, feedback, or dilemmas. Feel free to send us an email at apsychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com. That is a psychodelicious, psychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com.
The views expressed on this podcast are solely the opinions of Mike Stratton and Morgan Bowen, and do not reflect the views or opinions of any site broadcasting this podcast. Replication of this podcast without written permission is strictly prohibited.